Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Maybe the Vulcans were right. Maybe we weren't ready.
Not ready? How long were we supposed to wait?
Look what it's gotten us. We almost lost Earth.
Enterprise saved Earth.
If we weren't out there stirring up trouble, 7 million people might still be alive.
You weren't stirring up trouble, you were exploring.
I'm not sure there's much of a difference.
What do you suggest? Put our starships in mothballs?
No. We need them. But look at the Vulcans. They're not explorers. They keep their ships close to home. Never know who's going to come calling.
That's not the mission either one of us signed up for.
Maybe you'll feel differently after you've delivered a few dozen eulogies.
I think we can start the podcast. We can start the podcast by announcing it is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. Are we cool? Thus far.
Yep.
It's so got far, Star so Trek podcast. Good.
I agree with that.
Next, we can note that this is the 186th episode. No one noticed that, right? This is the 186th.
186.
Yes. Is the 100.
That, by my count, I am.
Is the 186th episode.
You find this amusing.
Yes, I do. Slightly.
That's what I have too.
186th episode of the podcast. So that's the second piece of information.
I beg your pardon.
Enterprise. Yes, thank you, Jesse. Thank you. Very helpful.
Season 4.
Off to another auspicious start.
This is really good.
Star Trek Enterprise, Season 4, Episode 3. Home, titled Home. We've been on a stretch.
Nice to have a place to go home to.
Yeah, go home to.
I did the thing.
You did do the thing. You're going to be doing a couple other things today, I imagine.
I bet.
After having watched this episode.
This guy's got all the things.
I'm not going to accuse, Dan, I'm not going to accuse your algorithm of anything in particular, but have you noticed that the string of episodes that we've done, we've had a long string of episodes that had single word titles?
Oh, yeah.
I noticed that.
That's true for the most part.
Well, it is indeed true for the most part.
Well, my algorithm does not take a title into account, so.
Are you sure it doesn't consider it at all?
No, it just considers dialogue.
Okay.
To find the episode.
Then, and it is in all likelihood, but a coincidence. But a coincidence that we've done.
Life is butter. Dream.
Resistance from Voyager. We did Vaults. From Deep Space Nine. We did Obsession from TOS.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
And that's it. But, I mean, that's a lot.
Well,
that's
I had
a
no
lot.
Doubt about
that's
that.
A bunch of podcasts.
It's a bunch of episodes in a row with the one word. With one word titles. Okay.
So that's son of a bitch.
Yeah. All right. So this week we are discussing Home, which I think is a very interesting episode.
It's nice to have a place to go home to.
Of Star Trek Enterprise. There's a lot to talk about in this episode. And normally we would have announcements at the front of the show if there were any announcements.
Well,
but I don't have any. Do you have an announcement?
I just want to make it clear to everyone that I'm a huge Mark Alimo fan.
Oh. Yes.
I'm a big Mark Alimo fan. If there was ever any question, yes. Sometimes you're riffing and you're just having fun.
Well, I'm just curious why there was ever a question.
We are all huge Mark Alimo fans. Yeah. We hope he lives a long and happy life.
Yeah. I think
many years after the publication of this particular podcast.
Sometimes it's just riffing and something, you know. I don't know. There's not really no excuse for anything, but yeah. Like...
For those in the dark, since most of our listeners are not going to be privy to some of the online drama that bubbles up from time to time.
You know how the internet
is. There was some concern that we may have been disrespectful to Mr. Olima. We intended no disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
No.
None intended.
I don't think
whatsoever.
He said anything.
No.
Well, no, I mean, it was a combination of what Patrick said and then what I said following that. And then I didn't even, and it was just like kind of a
go listen a couple episodes back to our Waltz episode and you can judge for yourself.
I didn't even realize the connection until I listened to it afterwards. I was like, oh, I guess I did kind of make an assertion after Patrick made a different assertion that they kind of stuck together. And I was, yeah.
The reason
it's being, like, it's no excuse or anything. It's just,
we're being opaque for the purposes of marketing. To entice you, the listener, who may not have caught that episode,
the mystery.
In going back and listening to it, and
plumb the depth.
But I wish nothing the best, podcast. Nothing but the best for
Mark
Olima.
If you're one of our many fans who have not yet been able to watch through Deep Space Nine, at least up to the point of Waltz, well,
what do you get? What are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for?
Just watch it.
Get on it. Just watch. You know, 3 or 4 episodes a day, you'll get there soon enough. All right. Okay.
Watch a bunch.
That's great.
We're very positive about Mark Olima.
Yes.
I'm serious, though. He's awesome.
Yes.
Dukat's an amazing
awesome.
Character,
the best.
Too.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know much about the guy, but I know the Dukat and.
You know the Dukat?
The Dukat. And, yeah. Seems like stand up.
It's awesome.
Okay. But this week, we are discussing.
Got a bad rap, that guy.
We're discussing this Enterprise episode, Home. This episode has sort of three main parts, the A, B, and C story. Mm. Yeah. You've got your Archer and his PTSD. And he's feeling pressured.
I feel like he was, more just felt like he was jaded. He's just become really jaded.
Well, you can get into that. Mm-hmm. What exactly is it about? Because there's a few different angles that are emphasized there. Then you've got tripping to Paul, visiting Vulcan.
They were seeing the sights.
Checking out the lava tubes.
I always thought
and all that business.
It was a planet with nothing on it, but they got them statues.
And then you've got your good old fashioned humans are racist pieces of shit. Sadly, unfortunately, some humans are.
And that guy just puffs up like a pufferfish
with Phlox.
Nobody knew.
That's so, sort of like the smallest part of the episode.
So Phlox can puff his face. He can make his tongue go long, and he can make a weird devil smile. That remember, like that one time he kept smiling, yeah, he smiled and he kept smiling up.
You have enumerated.
Can he whistle out the top of his head?
You have enumerated all three. Ooh. Dan has enumerated all three of Phlox's special powers. I don't know what the fuck Jesse's talking about.
Just wishful wondering.
What, do you think he's a whale? Dolphin or something?
I think Jesse
know what
said pufferfish.
Yeah, well, that was like, this particular trick was like a pufferfish.
And speaking of Vulcan, like, why is Vulcan so like such like a fire land? Fire desert Mars
like
land.
Kinda,
it's always been
Vulcan. It's like rock and
it's
lava.
Like
it's named after
on.
The fucking that guy, the Vulcan
volcanoes.
Who's like volcanoes and
Hephaestus.
That mining company, Vulcan mining.
I want to know the history of Vulcan to see what it made it get that way. Anyways, there was some.
Just watch more Star Trek.
So there were some good special effects that were kind of cheesy, but I enjoyed them anyways. Like the opening scene with the stadium out in the water and the people. The effects were so cheesy, but I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
Part of what made that scene funny was that stadium. I've never seen a fucking stadium shaped like that.
Yeah, it was weird.
Is it a water polo stadium?
Right.
Why is it a weird rectangle?
It does. That's not going to work.
It doesn't seem like the ideal shape for a stadium.
Don't watch anything at that stadium.
Why is it on an island?
And I was getting frustrated with Paramount Plus because it takes like 20 seconds to properly buffer the video.
And it's all low res.
And I wanted to see this opening scene in all its glory. And it kept by the time it got high res, it was past the scene. So there was no way for me to see it.
My streaming device remote has broken, and I was forced to watch it on my phone.
Boom.
Whoa.
That's intense.
Yeah. That is intense.
I would like to hear from our listeners outside of the United States who use Paramount Plus, and let us know if you have this same issue and what other issues you might have. Not to rag on Paramount Plus, but this is something that comes up.
I watched it on my phone.
It
was totally fine and awesome.
I have a separate copy of these episodes, so I didn't encounter that particular issue,
it could
I know there's been... When I watched shows on Paramount Plus, it does take a while before it like... gets like I'm watching Beavis and Butthead or new Star Trek shows or whatever. It's all pixelated for a while.
So The ads on Paramount Plus, I feel, have gotten more, are better at being like higher resolution than they used to be.
Oh, the ads are higher resolution, yeah. Except for they continue to be for things that I'm clearly not interested in my demographic.
Right.
I get frustrated that we live in a world where the computers are collecting all your private information and they're using it to hyper-target you with corporate ads to find ways to slurp more money from you. But like, what's more frustrating than that is when that doesn't work properly.
Yeah.
It's like, you're taking all my information and it's useless.
You're
presenting me with nonsense that I'm not going to even be tempted by.
I'm not buying that.
Agreed.
Yes.
Absolutely. I was thinking about that actually the other day about like, yeah, they know that I watch Strange New Worlds or whatever, you know, because you were talking about how they keep advertising Strange New Worlds to you over and over again.
Look, you don't need to advertise me something that I'm never going to watch. Like, whatever. I literally can't even remember what they showed me because it was so outside of my demographic.
Tulsa King.
You also don't need to show me that I'm going to watch the show that I'm currently watching.
Yeah.
That's aggravating.
Yeah.
What ideally should happen.
That's some HBO shit.
Is the evil AI algorithms or whatever are supposed to take all my information and present to me something that has some level of probability that I'm going to be piqued. I'm going to be aggravated that the system got me right. I want to be annoyed by that. And then
to that son of a bitch.
and then watch the program because I'm enticed by it because they're like, oh my God, that's right up my alley. Anyway.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Thank you. It's just it's a minor frustration.
So the other two special effects that I noticed that I really enjoyed was one where Archer was getting thrown off that cliff in his Zindi dream.
Yes.
That was a fun special effect.
It was so the Archer CGI dummy was pretty terrible.
Yeah, yeah. And then the giant Vulcan statues in the lava field or whatever.
Yeah,
those are pretty rad. Those are pretty rad. But yeah, that Zindi dream, is that why they presented those? This is just a quick aside. There was a part where they showed them the mountain lion prints. You know, yes. they were climbing up the side.
And then he did that thing that you can now do with your cell phone to identify the print. You can just take a picture of it.
Oh, interesting.
The Vulcan in this episode of Star Trek, like it. The way they did it, it has a very sort of studio feel, but the scenery of Vulcan is some of the most interesting scenery that I've seen of Vulcan. Like there's statues.
Yeah.
It's usually a planet that's got nothing on it. Like,
so
this was something. There's like a nice house and some nice statues, colossal statues.
To continue what I was saying before, that's okay.
I was really moved
all right.
to speak.
No, I'm all about speaking about Vulcan, and I just wanted to make this one quick aside.
And we're gonna—that's gonna happen. It's just that is my role here to like unwind this a little bit for our audience because we've gone completely off track here. So I was breaking down the three plots and that we can discuss in turn. Mm-hmm. Dan was making a quick aside. For which Jesse was then making an aside. So Jesse made his Vulcan aside.
So we need to dig ourselves out of this recursion.
So we're now going up a level to Dan's aside, and eventually we'll get back to talking about the individual plot.
But lines. I like talking about Vulcan because that is interesting. But
we're going to talk about it in this podcast.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
At the appropriate time.
Crucial.
Obviously.
Obviously.
So they saw those mountain lion prints, and that's when she was all...
Good thing I have you to protect me.
So I couldn't tell...
She did not need Archer to protect her.
No, she was
Captain Hernandez.
She's Captain Hernandez.
Great, great character. Well, wonderful character. No first name.
Erica, I think.
Erica Hernandez.
Erica. Well, how come online it doesn't say first name?
You have to like look. Maybe she's like... in another episode and they give her name then. But yeah, I don't remember.
I don't think in this episode
no,
she has a name.
I don't think.
No,
they just call her Hernandez.
That is correct. Now,
I concur.
So what I was, well, she was giving that line. I don't think she was being serious.
No.
Yeah, she seemed like she was. So was that whole mountain lion thing there as a, to give them a reason to flirt with each other? Or that Zindi dream, back at the Zindi dream, because if you're watching him sleep, you hear a mountain lion growl, and then that's when the Zindi pops. So do you think they just put that in
Zindi
there?
Pop.
They put that in there to sort of tease you into the Zindi dream.
Zindi pop.
So it was like a doorway into the Zindi dream. It's like, oh, he saw a mountain lion paw earlier. Now I hear a mountain lion. They're gonna get attacked by a mountain lion. Oh no! But it's a Zindi. What the fuck? Oh, it's a dream.
See, the thing is I'm kind of, you know, I'm just thinking back on things.
I think I'm taking my chances with the Zindi.
I'm thinking back on things and specifically that, you know, It could be that people have sort of differing definitions of the term aside.
Wait, is this what you're... You're about to give this really thoughtful response about what I was going to say, and you were just more commenting on the fact that...
It's just what you were... All the stuff you were saying, good stuff, but as just like I was suggesting that Jesse's stuff is part of the Trip and DePaul storyline, which we have not started discussing, your stuff appears to be all about...
Obviously.
About the Archer storyline, which we have not yet started discussing. We're still summarizing things and getting to the discussion.
We're at the preamble.
But it's
I beg your pardon?
But I will comment on your point when the time is right.
Oh, when the time is right.
Which is soon. Which is soon. Because we can talk about that now, if you like. We can start with the Archer story.
Okay, so this whole episode...
I know that's going to frustrate Jesse, because Jesse's got like this hard-on about Vulcan
on the mind
this week.
I am patient.
Well, this episode was a different episode. It started with Trip Tucker III and Phlox. They started all happy and hopeful, and they ended sad.
Yes, both of them ended sad.
But Archer started off all jaded, and he ended kind of okay. Yeah. So nobody really ended up happy. But yeah, whereas T3 and Phlox went downhill, Archer kind of went up a little bit. But yeah, they're both those endings for Phlox. The Phlox thing was interesting because they could have gone down the route of like, I'm screw them, I'm going to have a good time and it's going to be a happy ending with me laughing. Yeah. But then they chose to go the other direction of like, give these people some time.
You want to
discuss... But he still gets taken.
Let's discuss the Phlox thing first, because it's kind of heavy, but it's also like the shortest part of the episode. Then we can talk about the Archer stuff. Then we can talk about T'Pol and Trip. And then we're going to wrap it all up. It's going to be great.
Wrap it up.
All right.
All right. So the Phlox storyline, part of what I think makes that storyline so effective is the fact that Phlox is such a cheery, happy character, right? Mm-hmm. And it just works very well. Because T'Pol is an alien, too. They could have had T'Pol go down there, but T'Pol's a stoic Vulcan and blah, blah, blah. It would have been a very different storyline. We see Phlox, who we love and we know to be this cute, fun, nice, happy-go-lucky, positive person. And two things about this story are fucked up. First, that Phlox has to endure prejudice. Mm-hmm. That sucks.
Yeah.
But what sucks even more is that his story, as you note, Dan, concludes with him not getting to participate in things he wants
I'll
to participate
bring you some
in.
Takeout.
Yeah, because of that.
Right, he's going to go to like some kind of happening Chinese place.
Madame Chang's.
It's some heavy shit because it's not like your old Star Trek stuff would be like, racism is bad, here's why it's bad, and now like... this is why our future is better.
Right.
Whereas this story with Phlox is like, no, racism is still some fucked up shit. And it's difficult for people to deal with.
I guess one of the questions is do you want to approach that with like, give them their time to be racist for a while and let them get over it on their own? Or do you say, no, let's throw it in their face and be like, your racist shit is fucked up. You know that. And he chose the former, where he was like, no, they're racist. Let them work out their racism without me. But he didn't go for the latter, which would have been like, I'm gonna throw that racism in their face and say, fuck you.
I think what's like Hoshi's argument that...
It's a human argument.
Hoshi's argument, it is. First of all, it is a human argument. It's also kind of an American
argument. It's an American argument.
Yeah, and that actually reminds me of like the whole... Patrick, you brought it up before about the show being a little bit more nationalistic on some episodes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It was around 9/11.
It was after 9/11. In fact, this one was after the war in Iraq started.
Yeah.
Because this is 2004 when this came out. But Hoshi's argument is that you need
WMDs,
to face...
WMDs, man.
Yes. That you need to sort of combat prejudice forcefully and face it head on. That's what she's arguing to Phlox. Now, it's nice that she doesn't push it, because the thing is while you can definitely make that argument, the problem is that it shouldn't be incumbent on the victim of prejudice to have to risk their own life and situation to fight that prejudice, right? Mm-hmm. It's potentially a double victimization. It should be a choice. Like meeting it head on is one of many different ways you can try to deal with this prejudice stuff.
You're not chasing anyone out of here.
Yeah. And that's the way they chose to do it, right? Mayweather and Reed are like, fuck this piece of shit in his dumbass fucking shirt, man. His jacket.
He really likes the ladies. that read.
Reed does. I know, that. Dude.
Even more than Trip Tucker the Third, I think.
Oh yeah, because no, they way
buddied,
more.
They buddied together and did the Wild and Crazy Guys routine when they went to some other planet.
Yeah,
well, they
yeah.
were on Risa.
We talked
Risa.
About that.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That 2 days and two nights. Yeah. I think that was the last episode of Enterprise that we discussed a few episodes back. Before
how's your drink?
It's really been a while since we've done an Enterprise.
Yeah, well, we had Picard up in all that business.
Yeah, I know.
But so. Phlox, it's a heavy story that Phlox has to deal with it. I think they pulled their punches a little bit. I wish they were a little bit more overt about saying that Phlox has every right. Like it was a little unclear whether the show was saying Hoshi's right and Phlox is being lame or not. Like,
right.
I don't think so. I don't want to think so, but because of how it was portrayed, it's not 100% clear. That I assume the subtext is what I was saying before.
I have friends.
Yes, that Phlox is he's choosing a different path.
He's hanging out with his pets instead of going out to eat.
Exactly, and the fact
I
is,
have friends.
There's the you're sacrificing. He's because he's enduring prejudice. He's sacrificing one way or the other. He's sacrificing by not joining them. He would potentially be sacrificing by. Putting himself in a position where he might encounter
if he doesn't sleep that much, does he have to eat all the time? Does he have to eat a lot?
Data doesn't eat
because you're
well, Data's a symbiote, simulant. He's an automaton.
Well, so what Phlox made, I mean, it was kind of, it wasn't clear because Phlox made an interesting point. You know, these people have dealt with a lot. That's an interesting point. But then on the other hand,
I have friends.
Like when he did that, it was kind of sad. I mean, I'm not one to talk because like, I love hanging out with me and some animals. It's so fun.
Yeah.
And just having my alone time with some, my animal buddies.
Do you like petting your osmotic eel?
Yes.
Osmotic.
Is your osmotic eel a little under the weather?
Hey, Phlox's osmotic eel is actually his penis.
Would
that's
you like
canonical.
To pet my poopy?
That was actually one. Okay, I guess I'm going to give it away now. This was actually one of my questions.
Feeling better.
Whoops.
Feeling better.
Feeling better.
I am. Better. Thank you.
Feeling better.
Feeling better. Feeling better. How is that I'm confused as to how that would be a mystery.
Feeling better.
Do you know what that's what greater line that's a part of?
Feeling better.
What greater line?
No, I do not specifically know which line is part of.
Can you guess the context based on a short portion of the line?
Yeah, I'm feeling familiar with the game. This is a regular segment on our episode.
Okay.
Where you play an extremely short
mind
clip
checkers.
And ask Jesse and I to guess which part of the episode is from. Jesse and I never successfully do so.
Sometimes.
I don't think we have.
Once or twice.
Very rare. And then you tell us what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part we've arrived at.
Okay, so I'll play it one more time.
Lay it on me, Dan.
We're ready to go.
Feeling better.
Okay, here's the whole. Here's the answer.
Okay.
My osmotic eel is under the weather. I should stay aboard until she's feeling better.
See, you just talked about the osmotic eel. That's why
just
I thought
talk
it was.
About the
so
osmotic
I, that's,
eel.
I even gave a hint. I was like, oh, well, this gives this one
you
away. Then
you tricked us.
You guys didn't listen. You didn't
us.
Listen to me. You didn't listen to me when I gave you that hint.
We did hear the hint.
The hint was you were talking about the osmotic eel, and I was like, oh, well, I have a game for you, but you already sort of brought up the subject, so you'll probably guess this.
Okay. All
You're right. a podcast.
And my osmotic eel is under the weather, and I should stay aboard until she's feeling better.
Yeah.
See, that was...
It's penis.
Feeling better.
It's
feeling penis. Better.
Penis.
Feeling better.
okay. The racist... The racist guys, a couple points on the racist guys. The main racist guy was hilarious. He was fucked up.
He looked like a dweeb.
Yeah, he was just like...
How's your drink?
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
He was wearing like one of them sweatshirt hoodie things, which I got nothing against. I got one myself. It's just like, I don't wear it out to a bar. You know what I'm saying? Like, why was he dressed like that? He was dressed like a racist piece of shit.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they were trying to make
and,
it look like.
You know, it's always like this weak kind of like, I'm about to pick a fight with you in like this really like weak kind of way.
Yeah. People always like picking on fights with like military.
Oh yeah. I knew you. Yeah. You're not a Vulcan.
It seems pretty stupid to pick a fight with some Starfleet dudes.
Yeah.
There's those two Starfleet dudes. Like those are the two toughest guys on the ship.
I think that happens in bars though, where people like try to pick fights with like Marines and shit.
I mean, it's a fair point. I agree, you get enough alcohol in you.
But
then he had his like, he had, because he was the only one they could afford to give speaking lines to. Mm-hmm. So the other racists are just like some California blonde racist white dudes. Remember? Mm-hmm. And they all like just, they just sort of like hop in once shit starts going down.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Mm-hmm. That was funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
Do you know what else was funny?
What's that?
Well, it was when Phlox like did his puffer thing. Mm-hmm. Like all the racists got scared and ran away.
Yeah, they did.
like, what the fuck was that? They're all like, oh my god, get the fuck out of here.
Because nobody saw that coming, and even like Phlox's friends, they were like, "What?"
Well, Phlox almost seemed embarrassed. He had that look on his face, like he was so full of
shit. Because
was it like involuntary?
I think to him it was the equivalent of shitting yourself.
He had that look on his face where he was so full of adrenaline he was almost gonna cry or something. Has this ever happened to you?
Maybe.
Has this ever happened to you?
This is another regular segment. That Dan's been pushing.
One time, the old, have you ever gotten,
has this ever happened to you segment?
Have you ever gotten so full of adrenaline and pumped up because someone was acting fucked up and you're just sitting there like,
it's like, I'm going to twist this guy's head right off a stick.
And then you're so pumped up that then you start trying to eat to calm yourself down, but you're so pumped up you don't chew and swallow properly.
No.
So you get the food stuck in your throat, like a big lump, big lump in your throat. Do you ever get a lump in your throat?
Often.
The scenario you've described, the specific scenario,
because that's what Phlox looked like,
is not one that I've experienced.
That's because he was eating pretzels, and so I was like, he ate
the pretzels afterwards.
No, but I'm saying that's when your adrenaline.
Although it didn't look like he ate them, it was weird.
No,
did you notice that?
Then he didn't like
sort of put it in his mouth.
No, that's my point. Is that the adrenaline afterwards is so pumping, you're trying to calm yourself down by eating something or something.
You think the pretzels were making him thirsty?
No, that's not. No, what I'm saying is. All I was saying, I'm sorry, Jesse.
No, sorry. I'm going with it. This is the podcast.
What I'm saying is that I'm so full of adrenaline after something crazy has happened that I'm trying to calm myself down and I start eating or something like that, but I'm so full of adrenaline, I'm not chewing properly, my spit's not flying around properly,
yeah.
I'm not swallowing,
right.
So I get a lump in my throat. I bet that's what Phlox looked like he had going to
it. Sort of a delay in swallowing.
Yeah. So maybe it makes you thirsty too, I don't know. That's a good question, though, Jesse, you posed. So thank you.
Okay. Anything else about Phlox and the racists? Again, it's not much. It's an interesting storyline. This whole thing about coming home, I think, is very, very cool because Star Trek only goes back to Earth every now and then. And there's different vibes. This was an interesting one because it sort of retroactively builds into the Federation Starfleet mythos, a reason for why ships named Enterprise have certain expectations associated with them in terms of heroism and saving the world and saving the solar system and all that shit. Because we are introduced this episode to our ragtag crew awkwardly assembling on the stage, like they're trying to take your department photo at work, and everyone's like, oh, just get in the hallway by the cafeteria real quick. I'm gonna take a picture of everybody.
We've done episodes where they go back to Earth, but it's usually time travel episodes with Enterprise.
Yeah,
this is the only one we've talked about where they're actually on Earth in real time.
Yeah, at least since they were on Earth in the pilot. So we do that, but since then there's like very brief interludes where they maybe like get some weapons upgrades or something.
That's true
that.
For the most part.
But here we actually get to see some more of Earth culture, which is another thing we don't see a heck of a lot of on Star Trek, especially non-Starfleet.
Right.
We see a little bit in Picard season 1.
That's more of it.
A little bit of it in Deep Space Nine with Cisco's in New Orleans and some, you know. But
Upper Decks, Lower Decks.
upper Decker.
My brain is stuck.
But yeah, so it's cool
what's happened to you?
That they're going back to Earth and we're getting to see these stories unfold, and an important one and an interesting one is this whole idea of the prejudice against aliens based on the whole Zindi
xenophobia.
Yeah, and of course a reminder we
xenophobia
briefly touched on it earlier, but this was a direct analogy, a direct metaphor for what was going on in the United States after the September 11th attacks, after the beginning of the war in Iraq, a rise in in racism against
Islamophobia,
Islamic Americans and Arab Americans.
It was really something, man.
So this is all going on in the background.
You don't remember, man.
Of the,
you don't even know.
Yeah. A lot of them do.
Oh, I'm sure you don't even know. Yeah.
I think a lot of our audience knows.
Unless you're super young and for some reason you're
listening
to this
podcast. Dodged the Vietnam draft. but yes, the going home thing is cool and it gives these opportunities. However, and I know they're limited by the structure and everything. It's a little unfortunate that they weren't able to do a little more with this prejudice story, even if not in this episode, maybe a little bit more later. I think this is kind of where they make the point here, and there's not so much after this one.
I what's so funny, Jesse?
Nothing.
He thought it was funny how you said I am. Maybe he thought you meant I ams, like the dog food. All right, go ahead.
Bow wow.
Okay, well,
we're
talking about the prejudice, and we're talking about
The Zindi.
Ah, thank you, Jesse. Thank you, Jesse.
Jesse helped.
Jesse
help
saves the
you.
Day. the Zindi. I don't even know what question I'm trying to ask. There's an episode before this that deals with the Zindi attack on Earth, and I don't remember what episode that is. And it made me want to watch that because, like,
I think it's like some kind of two-part action. Isn't it?
Probably some kind of two-part. Do either of you remember that episode?
Well, it depends what you're talking about.
Talking about when the Zindi.
There's the
initial,
because they lost like how many millions of lives?
So there was
American lives.
American lives.
We lost so many American lives.
American life is worth $7 million.
7 million people died, which is one of the.
So that was from the initial Zindi test attack, which takes place.
Testes attack.
So in end of season two, beginning of season three,
ovaries attack.
You got your Zindi attack, and now you have to set aside the fact that it seems like it doesn't make any strategic sense for the Zindi to test their weapon that's not yet ready. And not yet at full-scale power, they decided to test it on the target that they ultimately wanted to destroy. They wanted to destroy the Earth because the Zindi were misled into believing that the Earth was going to cause them some sort of catastrophe, right? Mm-hmm. And so they test their weapon on Florida and kill Tripp's sister along with 7 million other people.
Oh, man.
So that's what initiates the rapid shift from Enterprise sort of frolicking in the nearby, you know, lands to having a dedicated mission all throughout.
That son of a bitch.
you rat bastard son of a bitch. And having that kind of through line through season three, which ultimately concludes with no big spoilers here. They managed to help foil the ultimate Zindi plot to completely destroy Earth. So that's where we stand basically at this particular episode. They've come home as the conquering heroes.
Well, I had no doubt about that.
What I propose is that we take that. We've done
a good
summary lead up. We take a break.
Take a break.
And then when we return from the break, focus on the archer of it all.
The Overarcher episode.
The Overarcher.
We'll be right back. All right, we're back.
Welcome back.
Another World War III epic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it won all the awards.
That's hilarious.
Another World War III epic?
Because in our time, it's like another World War II.
They were making fun of, like, Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, I know, right?
So that business. One World War III must be the most catastrophic of them all.
It was.
And probably the worst movies, too.
Like, remember in that episode of Discovery with Pike, and they have the World War III stuff they look at in that episode, if you know what I mean.
World War
so,
III.
Hey there. We're talking about 7 million people died.
Talking about 7 million. That's a prime number. You like prime numbers, right, Dan? Didn't you reveal this personal quirk recently, publicly on the podcast? It was a quirk that neither Jesse nor I, who have known you for decades, were aware of, that you had a particular fondness for prime numbers.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. But first I want to say 7 million is not a prime number.
See, that was an aside. What I did was an aside.
Okay, sort of. Not really, because you asked a question, posed a question.
7 is a prime number.
Yeah, but 7 million is most definitely not a prime number.
What if it's like 7 million and one?
That might not be a prime number. I don't know.
Check it out.
That's actually that's the basis of cryptography. Is it's prime number factorization.
Check it out.
Do you have like primenumber.com?
No, it's
primenumber.xxx.
The basic overview, the 10-second...
Sexy prime
number. It's not a prime number wall calendar.
The 10-second overview is that the way they use cryptography is they take a number that's the product of two prime numbers. So if you took 3 times 7, that's 21. 21 would be have two
21.
Prime factorization. And so that's... And except they do this with giant numbers, and it's actually really hard to figure out...
I'm kind of more into factorials myself.
They take huge numbers, and it's hard to figure out the prime factorization of big numbers. That's how... Because you can go one direction. You can find the product, but you can't go backwards to find the two numbers that made up that product. And that is how cryptography is based on, which could get fucked when we have quantum computing, but they have elliptical cryptography, which is an answer to that.
Wait.
You're talking about a flux capacitor?
Something. But the point I was next question.
All right.
What
next question? Yes, I did say that. I didn't you guys knew that I'm a little like, you know, I sometimes takes me
let's put some words, some English words.
Well, I'm trying
to the description.
Well, I'm trying not to fall back on like OCD because I don't want to overuse that term.
You don't want to overuse the term or self-diagnose.
Misdiagnose.
But I think you guys have been around when I've taken like a long time to leave my car because I'm like not sure that it's locked and stuff like that.
And it's never once been a frustrating.
I've been there.
I can't even tell if you're being sarcastic.
It's never been a problem.
I can tell now.
We've never been waiting to like, you know.
I've heard other people talk
do something.
About it.
No, I'm kidding. I'm teasing you. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, all three of us, I think, have some of these peculiarities.
I've got a bit of the same.
It's just interesting when ones that were maybe not so apparent.
Right.
Poke their heads up out of the foam.
So I have gotten a lot
the
better.
Foam of life.
I have gotten a lot better about the leaving car door things locked and trusting they're locked. I've gotten better at that. But yes, I
need to get a car with an app. That you can click buttons on the app.
No, because then I would be checking it every 5 minutes or something.
Yeah, but then at least you would not be at the car.
Yes.
You'd be wandering around doing shit.
But it would be at the expense of me like having to do it every other second.
You're probably going to be looking at the phone anyway other shit.
I'd rather front load my time with being able to leave my car than having to like spend the rest of my hangout time being like, well, I still have control. What if I accidentally unlocked it, you know?
And this is related to prime numbers also. Just throw the prime number thing in there.
Okay, the prime number thing is just kind of like when I present things, I like to do them in usually multiples of threes or fives, sometimes sevens.
What do you mean when you present? Oh, when you like present lists, for example?
Well, when I write messages on a chat, like I tend to write them in threes and fives.
That's right. That was the peculiar thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was where it went beyond just sort of
I didn't know that.
Gentle fondness for the shapes of certain numbers, and the sort of philosophical.
No,
it, philosophical.
How do you
shapes.
Feel about circles?
I mean, circles are tight. They're like pretty much the awesomest shape there is.
Okay. But you're not into ellipses? Elliptical?
oblique spheroids?
Yeah, how about an oblate spheroid?
I think circles are
so... all about the oblate spheroid?
Circles are so perfect, they seem like they're technically impossible.
Did you
mathematically impossible.
Did you know? Did you know that the sun is basically one of the roundest things we've ever fucking
measured?
Oh,
yeah, sun's pretty round. Yeah.
And that's somewhat surprising.
Even rounder than a marble?
Because of all the gravity.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's because of the
fucking...
Oh, and
because it's so big that, like, if a change that looked big to us would be minuscule.
Here's the thing.
If
you somehow had, like, a rocky planet that big, it would still be an oblate spheroid if it was spinning, because it would bulge at the center. But because of the nature of the sun, both the gravity and the outward force of the nuclear... fusion going on in there.
Nuclear
the combination
fusion.
Of the two puff everything out into a near perfect sphere.
Yeah. Obviously.
Yes. Well, so back to the old Star Trek.
Okay. So anyways,
like the sun.
It goes back to like, you know, when I flick light switches on and off, you know, you want to do a certain number of times.
Like seven times or three times.
Yeah, or five. Usually three or five. Yeah. Sometimes seven.
I mean, but sometimes six.
Or like in school, like when the lights would go out and all the kids would start hooting. Like, woo!
What about if you like think you did it seven times, but like actually you did it six, you just didn't realize?
Well, that's
that you
fine.
Made a mistake?
How would I know? I wouldn't know.
Like, but you would
like
know
your mind
that there's
just,
the possibility.
Like, your mind just tripped up a little bit.
I'm sorry. That's unfair. I mean, I'm just fucking with you. Okay.
So there's a reason I brought this up. And the reason...
You want to talk about Archer's PTSD.
What I call Jaded Archer. And yes,
Jaded
how did you know?
I Context clues.
Okay.
I guess that's the best I can offer.
Context clues.
Context clues. That's it. Hey, I'm not good at much.
What else do you want from
me?
I'm
good at context clues. I slurped that shit right up.
So that was one of the 11 things that I wrote down in this episode that made him jaded. There are 10 other things I wrote down that we can go through if you want.
So, okay, what did you... So you read one
evidence,
thing.
Evidence that he...
So you have 11 things. You have a...
Which is a prime number. I know. I didn't mean... Okay. That was an accident.
All right.
That wasn't an accident. That just happened.
That retroactively justifies that previous conversation.
Yeah. Oh, it does. Which
otherwise, potentially might have been considered a waste of time by the audience.
You brought it up, though. You asked me about my peculiarity. So I was wondering, it's like, we can go back into my personal life if you really want.
We all three share responsibility.
I think Jesse's innocent in this one.
We'd like to think so.
Am I?
But he needles us with his non sequiturs every now and then.
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
Mm. I don't know. I just listed a bunch of things that were evidence symptomatic of his jaded nature, I guess. So.
It's interesting that you say jaded. I think that's a fair adjective. I think that's a fair description. But to me, there's kind of like, there's like the jadedness, but there's also the fear. There seems to be, he's like terrified.
It's true.
And he's sad that he even states it outright that he looks at Captain Hernandez and he's like, I see I see the person I used to be. The difference is
that was one of the things on my list.
She's not as naive as him at that time. Partly because of the experience he went through.
Right.
And I think that was part of what was where she was helpful to help him get over that. But I do think that a part of it is driven by really it's trauma. It's the trauma he felt with like people died under his command. He did fucked up shit, like torture people. And he vocalizes all of this. He's like, I did fucked up horrible shit. Everyone's like, I'm a hero. But I did fucked up shit and people died as a result of decisions I made. And I could have made different decisions and made, you know, that whole second guessing yourself. Mm-hmm. He's going through all
but
that.
But this planet would have been a dust ball.
And then on top of that,
ball of dust,
is the whole hero worship stuff, which is both making him feel guilty for the decisions he had to make and second guess some of his decisions, right? But it's also a new pressure, right? It's like, okay, now you're just gonna like, you're responsible for saving the world. And he's doing what a lot of people do when they're scared and feel pressure to have to like protect people is they decide to pull in and become more violent, right? They're like, we got to get bigger weapons. We got to get more ships and have them just float around in orbit of Earth.
And he's feeling that like, I mean, they're the first people to go out into the galaxy. Yeah. And he's feeling that they stirred up the trouble that led to the Earth almost getting messed up.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, so I guess his first, it was a switcheroo. It was a mislead when he was first.
Are you talking about the mislead where you
no,
see the camera?
I can guarantee
camera
that it's
looking
not.
At a climbing butt and you're like, oh, they're going to show Captain Hernandez. And then it like zooms up and it's like, no, it's Sweaty Archer. He also has a sexy butt. So, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
You were fooled by that, right?
Yeah, I was fooled by that.
I was fooled by that. I think that was on purpose. Sorry.
When she was all like came up to him, for the first time they saw each other, she said something. What did she say? I don't know.
You mean in the bar?
At the bar. Yeah, she said something to him. I don't know.
Are you setting up something?
No, I'm not setting up anything.
Oh, you're actually searching for this.
Yeah, I was searching, and I don't think I'm going to find it. Right? Erica was at the bar.
Erica. You're calling her Erica, even though I don't remember anybody saying her name, but I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She's the captain.
It just sort of jumped out at me.
It's okay because they are the same rank now.
Yeah, I think that's another important aspect of this.
Oh, here it is.
This episode, the storyline is that Archer needed help. He needed to talk to somebody, and specifically, he needed to talk to a true peer. Which, as captain of the ship... And
I'm a troopier! A troopier!
This is something that's come up in a lot of other stories in general and a lot of other Star Trek stories.
Someone who's part of a troop is a troopier?
Is that the captain sometimes is isolated because there's nobody of the same rank with the same responsibilities.
Troopineer.
You know, there's nobody he can talk to. Or there's nobody they can talk to that can sort of match up. And now he has somebody. He can talk to Captain Hernandez on that same level. But I also like that they have a professional relationship in addition to this sort of human contact, sexual, you know, sexy, sweaty mountain climbing relationship.
So you could tell that they were flirting when she saw him, when they made first eye contact in the episode. And she says that she told Archer that galactic heroes have to sit at a table.
Yeah.
And he gave her this like long stare before he like spoke. And that stare was just like, I remember what we did. I know, he was just giving her, it was just this like,
wait a minute.
It's the kind of stare you could either give someone like that or someone you're about to punch in the face. And he wasn't going to punch her in the face.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh yeah, I remember. He just was, we went somewhere, face. But they're being all flirty, right? And so he seems like he's flirty from the start. But then why is he reluctant? He's reluctant to have her join him on the hike. It seems like at first he was like all into her and being flirty with her. But then he like decided at some point that he wanted to go on the hike by himself. I know he wanted to go on the hike because he wanted to get away and he was sick of being like getting praise.
It's really not safe though, so it's pretty good that she showed up.
Well, I think the thing that she mentions the whole like, he's like, do you think I have a death wish? And she's like, well, you tell me. Mm-hmm. She showed up there in part, I think, because she was like, this dude is in a bad place.
He's going a bad way.
This is not. There are other things you could do to be alone and get away from the crowd. Mountain climbing with...
Are you telling me I have some kind of a death wish?
He could have just gone fishing.
Like, sure. Or to a cabin. Or to the moon.
To the fucking moon.
Or something. He's specifically he's going against protocol, and not just Starfleet protocol, like climbing protocol and outdoors person protocol, which is don't go to dangerous things by yourself. It seems like maybe not a death wish, but maybe that have a good excuse to not have to be under the pressure of having to make decisions for a while.
When she asks him, when she tells him, you know better than to go climbing climbing without a partner. He gives this like sort of like this like stern sort of like brooding like look, but it's all adorable somehow because it's Archer.
And he looks all he's pouting.
Yeah, that's
totally
what it is.
Pouting.
Did they have hover boots back then? I mean, they were obviously they weren't using them, but do you think they had the hover boots?
That's a good question.
Like well, they had in later Star Trek.
It's after 2015, so they would have at least a hoverboard.
Yes.
Because those were invented prior to 2015. They stopped suppressing them.
Hoverboards were invented in like 1986 in Back to the Future 2?
No, in Back to the Future 2, they were commonplace by 2015. I know what you're saying is that outside of the movie universe, in the real world, they were secretly developed, but then suppressed by a cabal of
parents,
angry moms,
right?
Who are no fun.
Who are no fun.
Mean old moms. The ones that... didn't have the good, like, didn't have, like, sodas in the fridge.
Yeah, you couldn't have, juice.
Gave you a handful of frozen peas as a snack.
Oh, Lord.
Frozen peas.
And by the way, frozen peas are good.
They give pennies at Halloween.
They're good if you cook them, yes.
They give you a swift kick in the ass at Easter.
Like, I want some jelly beans.
So,
they stomp on your eggs. They're like, no eggs for you.
So when
the mean old moms that shut down the hoverboard.
So he was all Archer and Archer and Erica were all in the new ship getting all built up and stuff. And he pulled the misdirect where he was talking about like all the upgrades that she was doing. And he was all like, I had an argument once with Captain Jeffries. He was the one who designed the NX class. And he's like, I told him I didn't want to be in a command of a warship trying to make first contact with new species. And she's like, oh, here we go. But then he reversed it. He was like, he was right. We needed those weapons. So y'all seemed like he was
flipped it and reversed it.
He flipped it for real. But I had a question about this line. He goes, I had an argument once with Captain Jeffries. He was one of the designers of the NX class. Erica says, I'm aware of that. Yeah. Which is she aware of? Is she aware that he had an argument with Captain Jeffries, or is she aware that he was one of the designers of the NX class?
She was aware of the latter, and she was complaining that she's like, Archer, why are you always fucking spitting out all this exposition? Yeah. She's like, I know, I'm not stupid. I'm your equal. We're familiar. The other trivia, of course, which is almost need not be stated, but will state it as a matter of principle, is that Jeffries is a reference to Matt Jeffries, who is a designer on Star Trek, and that's what Jeffries tubes are named after. So it's that's a term that apparently now has been transferred into some actual like building or ships or whatever. Anyway, Matt Jeffries, look him up.
Mm-hmm. He's got them tubes.
So Archer all flipped out.
You can climb up them.
He all flipped out at Saval. He came at him pretty violently at one point too. That seemed like...
Yeah, man. I mean, he's been through some stuff.
There's no need to get emotional, Captain.
fucking Saval.
I know,
right? They say that to make him emotional because they know it works.
So Graham Greene, who plays Saval and has played Saval since the first episode of Enterprise, does such a great job with his character. Mm. And one thing that's brilliant about him is over the course of the series, you really grow to like and respect him while at the same time still being completely aggravated by the guy. Mm-hmm. He is so annoying. And it is in that he is kind of like the turn here happens here in this episode at the end of the episode when he talks to Archer and says, hey, T'Pol, explain to me like what the deal was. Like, we're cool.
I couldn't help them.
Yes. But at the beginning, you are kind of, and I think this is a very nicely done thing by the writers to show the progression. It's sort of like a microcosm of the progression of the entire series, because there's this antagonism at the beginning between humans and Vulcans, particularly Archer, particularly our human friends and the Vulcans. And then through the course of events, they grow to respect each other and understand each other's critiques of each other a little bit better and all that other stuff. That happens in this single episode where, again, there's this antagonism at the beginning.
I couldn't help them.
And you can understand both points. I think that's another important thing here is like both viewpoints are reasonable because as Saval says, he's like, look, we're just going by what they're telling us. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I like that aspect of the storyline. I thought it was, mm-hmm. it was a nice
and Saval nice thing. And you could tell Saval like was coming to his side, trying to meet in the middle because he gave him a handshake. He put his hand up for a handshake
instead of the old thing. And Vulcans don't like touching sweaty, gross, clammy human hands.
They don't even like to smell us.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, so Archer
just like to marry us.
Archer basically publicly disrespected Saval, and then he apologizes to him later, which is nice. But at the same time, the damage is already done. He already disrespected Saval in public, like. It's like
that public.
It's like it was in front of the council of people.
Yeah, but you gotta like apologize for shit, can't you?
You can apologize. I'm saying, but he should apologize in front of other people because what he did there.
Oh, okay, I get what you're saying. So the apology was private, while the embarrassment
and you know what that's called? That's called having your cake and eating it too. Because he got to tell Saval off and then got to get forgiven, but he didn't have. But everyone still knows what he thinks about Saval, so he should apologize in front of everybody.
I think that's a fair point and a good observation. with the caveat being that we don't know exactly what Archer was planning on doing, because Saval came out with this whole like, oh no, it's all good, dude. It's all good, dude. We heard the deal. You saved the universe. That's great. You saved the whole area, the whole section of this quadrant. You know,
the Alpha Quadrant.
You saved all these parsecs from the expansion of the expanse.
Oh yeah, what were they referring to by the expanse? They weren't referring to it as
it's because of all that sphere builder shit in the third season with the expanse. It was growing over time.
But it's not. It had nothing to do with like the expanse. The other story, the book, and then show the expanse. No. That's something different.
Yes, Dan.
That's something different.
Because that is a separate science fiction property.
Right. But they're both called The Expanse.
That postdates this time period.
So the Expanse is doesn't refer to just one thing. It can be many things.
Well, yes, because the term Expanse is a pre-existing word in English
that's why health insurance doesn't cover it. Oh.
What? The Expanse? Because it's a pre-existing...
Actually, that's not true anymore. They have to cover pre-existing.
I was going
to
say, that joke not only doesn't work outside of the United States, it doesn't even work really in the United States.
And it only vaguely had anything to do with... It was like, health insurance doesn't deal with words. So, that was a terrible joke.
I mean, it wasn't great.
No.
But, we're flying by the seat of our podcasting pants here. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? I don't know.
What are you going to
do? Podpants.
So we already talked about sweaty Archer.
Oh wait,
Saval, I wanted doing his whole thing.
So there was
Gary Graham was great on Alien Nation.
Oh, is he
he was the guy on Alien Nation, the non-alien guy.
I never saw that show. All I know is they got drunk on spoiled milk.
It's worth checking that show out. That show is a more interesting show than you might initially think.
I was going to point out that there were two clichéd lines in one.
This is a podcast, so pointing at things is of
are you pointing
utility.
At me?
Okay, Dan's mad when I make these meta jokes.
No.
He's got to find the perfect audio file to scold me with.
No.
It's just different variations on no.
So there was the one that I always bring up, which is the "that's an order." There was one of those lines.
Ah, yes. I wrote that down in big capital letters.
That's an order.
I was like, Dan, what say you?
I say, Forrest goes, "The debriefing's on hold indefinitely. I want you to take some time off to clear your head." And Archer goes, "With all due respect, Admiral, I don't need a vacation." And Forrest goes, "That's an order, Captain." The second cliche in that was when Archer was like, "With all due respect." That's another one. That's not quite as...
So again, some background for our newer listeners. Dan has a particular bugaboo. Trademark bugaboo. TM. Registered trademark R symbol copyright. He has a particular bugaboo about when people on television programs, or other media, I'd imagine, use the term, "That's an order."
Well, I had no doubt about that.
In the specific scenario in which I was getting a little confused about the nuances, but I think you understand the vibe of like, "That's an order." It's a cliched thing to do.
Right.
And then so when it comes up on Star Trek episodes, which is frequently, we like to throw it to Dan and get his judgment on whether or not this was a cliched, not cliched.
You don't always catch him.
I mean,
when it is, and even if it's cliched, does not mean it cannot be appropriate in the context of the show. So I'm always excited to hear what you think.
It was a little weak. Like, it was just kind of like, "I order you to take a vacation." You know, and I understand what you're saying is like, clear your head because you're not doing a good job here. But to be like, "That's an order. Go to the beach and have a Mai Tai. That's an order." You know, I was like, fuck that. You know, that he could. It just seemed a little. It just didn't seem necessary.
I'm gonna climb a mountain.
Yeah, and then Archer...
Fuck your Mai Tai, Admiral. Bullshit.
And then Archer is all like, "With all due respect, you know." But what's funny, though, is he said, "That's an order." And here's what's different, is most of the time when somebody gets a "that's an order," they follow the order. Archer totally didn't follow that order. He was like basically like, fuck you.
He's a maverick.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he did take time off.
So...
I mean, isn't that
like he climbed a mountain?
I guess he did take some time off.
I mean, he might have stretched the order a little bit.
Well, no. So then, yeah, it's a week. That's an order. That's what I say.
All right. So we'll
it's kind of an esoteric prop. There are esoteric properties to it, but
this is why we have to ask you each time.
Intuition. Yeah.
We need to provide sufficient data, longitudinal data over time via the podcast, so that whatever AI turns into Roko's basilisk. We'll have some idea as to how to judge whether or not "that's an order" is cliched or not. Because since we're going to be relying on AI to develop all our media, apparently, because that's what corporations are thinking doing. Since they're going to be writing all the scripts to Law and Order Special AI Unit, we at least want them to understand to use a cliche and when to avoid using a cliche.
What if I declared the Caliphi?
Ooh. Well, we're getting to that. We're going to take a break in a second, and then we'll get to the Vulcan stuff. I know now Jesse was eager before, and now Dan's starting to get a little eager.
A little eager beaver.
Anything else that we need...
Ears is getting all pointy.
...to mention about the Archer side of things. I guess one thing to mention is that it seems like he's got this relationship here, and we've seen Archer have romantic entanglements before, but always sort of frivolous or whatever. Mm. And I hesitate to overgeneralize.
He's a player.
Well, I don't know about that, but like here, it seems sort of genuine, even though it's still flingish. It seems like it's a therapeutic fling for both of them.
Yeah. It's good times. Good times were had by all.
It's probably been a while for that.
Yeah. So just a couple of the other jaded remarks. He was basically like, you know, "You'll spend a lot of your time boldly going into battle." That was a really fucking and things have changed a lot since Enterprise left space dock.
Better get ready to die, Captain.
Yeah. She's all talking about like, it's like, "Yeah, you really want should we really have a military officer?" He's like, he suggested assigning entire squadron of military officers. Like, that's a little over the top. You know,
because he's scared.
Yeah, but I mean, he's trying to make a point. He's trying to make a point more than he's serious.
All the eulogies you're gonna give.
Yeah, all the eulogies, like that one too. He's bitter about schools being named after him. You know,
I could see that.
Yeah, maybe you'll feel differently after you delivered a few dozen eulogies. He admits that the reason he went to the mountain is because he's sick of being congratulated, because he's been torturing people and he marooned a ship full of innocent people. Yeah, and pretty much everything else that you guys already kind of mentioned.
I'm sick of being congratulated, so I decided to climb a mountain.
Yeah, yeah, and he did.
What the fuck, dude?
I don't know, man.
It's also sort of funny because
I've gone to the fucking beach.
I don't think we have a lot of sort of a pre-existing idea of Archer being into mountain climbing. It's possible there was a mention. I mean, the main thing we ever hear about him is that he's super into water polo.
Well, I know one thing. If you had a pre-existing idea about it, health insurance wouldn't cover it. Because it's but you can actually, they're not allowed to, they have to cover pre-existing conditions now. So
it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Joe continues to not work. all right. So I guess that covers most of the Archer stuff. I do like that this episode cared that Archer lost something in terms of the exploratory Star Trek vibe that he had previously had, and that part of the idea here was that he needed to get that back, or at least a taste of that back. And it's not 100% at the end of the episode, but he has sort of kind of reevaluated how he looks at things, because the fact is he all the advice he gave is perfectly sound advice, but he could have given it in a non, as you put it, Dan, jaded way. Mm-hmm. He could have put it in a matter of fact way, which is like, oh yeah, we learned some shit we're going to have to deal with that we kind of didn't expect. We'll adjust our parameters a little bit and then continue to explore and be cool and try to be rad.
Maybe we should put a Mako in there. I think we should put a whole team of them in there. That's like, it's like a kid being like, I wouldn't do any of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just making a point.
Actually,
I did that last week. I was just like, I wouldn't do any of it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, no. And then I went to bed and I was like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
What are you? That's
Jesse, do you know what he's talking about?
He's not talking about the podcast.
You're just talking about stuff that happens at your house?
You just went home and you were like, I don't want to go to bed.
So I just laid down and I just kept my eyes open all night.
I held them open with my fingers. Right. I stared at my wall.
Okay, how about
you did everything you could to sabotage your mission.
The light zone.
Sabotage. Okay, let's take another
second
quick break, and then when we come back, we'll wrap up the episode by going through this whole trip into Paul business. Charles Trip Tucker the Third,
T3, as I like to call him.
Be right back. And we're back. Oh, podcast. 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 Podcast.
I wish that the Enterprise had a Borg episode, because then T3 could have met BQ.
Enterprise did have a Borg episode.
I know.
It's a really good episode.
I know. But they didn't meet BQ.
Yeah. One other thing about Archer, Captain Hernandez thing. They chose to have Captain Hernandez and a romantic part of you could, maybe that was TV-ish or whatever. Think about what this story would be like if instead it was just like an old pal of his who's going to become a captain, male or female, that doesn't matter. It's just like some non-romantic pal. It'd be interesting. I think you could tell the same story. I don't think you need the romantic component. I think the romantic component does serve as sort of a shortcut of like
to like loosen them up a little bit when they do it.
Well, okay. See, the reason why, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because some people have critiqued this episode saying like Archer gets better. He solves his mental health problem by like getting laid, which is funny. I think that's an oversimplification. I think they're using the romantic entanglement here as a shortcut for Archer needed like human contact, like some sort of like base human stuff. He needed to get out of the whole captain's chair business and just take some time to be like a human being. And that was what helped him recover. But yes, if you want to oversimplify, all right. He got laid, and now he's like feeling a little bit chipper.
If you want to oversimplify, you're insulting an entire Reddit audience right now.
You know, the way you phrase that does not make me feel bad at all. Because you added a modifier.
I just assumed it was Reddit. I don't actually know. I don't know where you read it, but I assumed it was Reddit.
Did you read it on Reddit?
No, yeah, an old
I already read it already.
I mean, you like to get opinions on old episodes, Reddit's probably like the quickest place to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got archive Trek BBS stuff.
Yeah, that's for hardcore shit.
Though. Go back to FidoNet and Usenet, like back in the 90s. Not for Enterprise, of course, but for some of the.
Just get a time machine and go back.
If you want to go see those Usenet things where they're all like, you can't have a black guy on the space station.
Oh, right.
Like when Cisco was announced as the, there was a whole thing.
God.
Because racists have always been around on the internet, even before the World Wide Web.
Even before there was an internet.
Yeah.
I don't think FidoNet, there was racists. There's no reason to have a FidoNet anymore. That's just a...
I mean, that's not... And that's why there is no
I think that all they... Phytoplankton? All FidoNet did was batch all the messages at the end of the day and then send them off, right?
Batch.
That's pretty much what it did.
Yeah, batch.
But it was...
I batched the other
for
day.
The time, batch. For the time being, it was... at the time in the 90s, it was pretty impressive, FidoNet. Okay.
I have friends.
Yes, we all have nerdy BBS friends, nerdy. Bulletin board system friends from the olden days of the internet before everything went to shit.
It's true for the most part.
Okay, to Paul and Charles Tripp Tucker III.
All right.
Visiting Vulcan.
Here we go.
Where would I stay?
Yeah, really.
Where would I stay?
On this uncomfortable house, bed huh? in Vulcan.
Your mom's house, huh?
I like this storyline. It's sad. It's sort of the most meaty.
My mom's house. That was the most interesting guest room.
I like the Archer storyline. The Phlox one was 4 o'clock. Was truncated. This one had some meat to it because we learn more Vulcan stuff. We get people always talk about the Klingons being dramatic. I think that top spot goes to the Vulcans. The Vulcans, I know, right? When it comes down to like over dramatizing
drama, over dramatized,
over dramatized.
Remember when I talked about sports junkies last week or the week
yes,
before?
Yes, I remember you talked
drama?
About. Yes, you talked
that's
about.
That's why you said it
again. And just like last week, I will explain to our international audience that these
and
sports
non,
junkies,
non-Virginia living, non-DC area living,
sports junkies is a local sports. Sports radio.
Sports
show.
Comedy radio. Yeah, well, I mean, that's that one. They call it, wait, don't they call it like guy talk or something stupid like that?
Whatever the demographic. I haven't listened to an actual radio in quite a
And
long
I'll say what I said last time, too, which is that sports junkies used to be syndicated to like several locations. So it used to be
several locations.
So I think like in Florida, they used to have it and stuff
okay.
like that.
Okay. All right. Still.
All the Vulcan religious stuff is all. Like these elaborate rituals.
And most of these rituals we've seen some form of or some hints of in previous incarnations with Spock and other characters. Tuvok.
Speaking of the ritual, I thought and also along a similar line of last week when I played Orbital Sensor Net. Do you remember when I played the Orbital Sensor Net?
Orbital Sensor Net.
Yes, I remember that.
You remember that? So there was one more this week. That was at the end of the. It was like the last line of the episode when they were there was that Vulcan guy all talking. He goes. This is how he goes. He goes.
This is our way.
Yeah, he's got
a little... our way.
Yeah,
our way.
Some
kind of
Vulcan
priest. Our way. Our
breathiness.
Our way. Our way.
Nothing at all.
Our way.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
Our.
Nothing at all.
Our way.
Our.
Nothing at all.
Rotisserie.
Our way.
Our way.
Rotisserie chicken. Like a rotisserie chicken.
I was playing Super Mario Brothers.
I was playing Super Mario Brothers with my rotisserie chicken and French fries.
And avocado.
Avocado?
Here's what you're going to do. T'Pol and Tripp, they're going to...
Yes, back on top.
T'Pol and Tripp, they're going to go to the Vulcan, and Tripp's going to wake up early in the morning.
Yeah, her mom was ringing that chime.
You're going to see Tripp's nipples.
Trip's nipples.
That's true for the most part.
People keep saying we're too sexist because we're on Star Trek. We're always showing the boobs.
I think that guy needs.
Well, I had no doubt about
get out
that.
In the sun.
They can't call us sexist. They can't call us sexist if we show Archer's butt and Trip's nipples.
I don't get it.
You get in one episode, you get Trip's nipples and Archer's butt. Two for one. Two and a half.
I don't get it.
Two, three, three for two. Two. You get the idea. It's going to be great.
I think you still get a lot. You still get a lot of T'Pol, but
no one can call us sexist at all when we have T'Pol prancing around Vulcan, wearing something no other Vulcan is wearing.
Never.
Her mom's not wearing it. None of these other people are wearing it.
No one's ever worn it.
And nobody can call us sexist because we have Tripp's nipples.
So
Tripp's nips.
Tripp's nips.
Short.
So this episode was an example of two Vulcan lies. There were two Vulcan lies in this episode.
Two Vulcan lies.
There's a lot
lies.
Of Vulcan lies.
This
baby.
Episode, because Vulcans don't lie, apparently, but we...
Listen, man.
But, you know,
we know.
There's more than, there's the more than two.
Dan is being sarcastic.
Well, I mean, the idea that they Vulcans claim they don't lie.
Yeah. I just want, we get new listeners all the time. It's a growing audience. And so, like, I want them to know that you're not... a fool. You're not somebody who thinks that...
They just don't lie in front of each other.
No, you just... By saying, I know you're not a fool, you basically commanded me to agree with what you said. Well, I don't want to be a fool, so okay. I guess I better agree with them.
Vulcans lie to themselves.
I will rephrase that.
Okay, let me just rephrase...
I can recognize how that could have come off.
Look, I was... I left some words out. Vulcans claim they don't lie, okay? Yeah.
They don't lie.
Yeah, precisely. They stereotype the uneducated Star Trek fan, the non-serious Star Trek fan.
Wow, now you're gatekeeping.
Normally I'm against gatekeeping, but on this particular point, I just wanted to be clear that, yes, people who only know a little bit about Vulcans might be like, oh, I thought they couldn't lie, but we know.
We know the truth.
Those motherfuckers lie out their ass.
So T'Pol goes, you have the option of choosing another mate. Kosk says, I don't want another mate. Kosk. T'Pol says, you should be aware, I've been ill recently. Kosk goes, ill?
Yeah, what the hell is
T'Pol
that?
T'Pol goes, it could take some time for me to recover, assuming it's even possible.
That means, like, you're not banging me? Is that what that means?
She straight up lied. She's not ill. That's a weak lie, too.
No, but they made reference to the whole neurological chemical, like with the Trillium business.
Oh, okay. Right.
I think she was referring to recovery from that. But yeah,
I don't know.
But you're right in that it's at the very best, it's a partial off-center truth. It's not the truth.
If that's what they were referring to, then it was an excuse she was making, if anything.
Yes, I agree 100%.
Anyway, so then,
I'm being semantic.
So then, hey, semantic. Wait, no, then you'd have to say, I am semantic. Right. Hey, semantic. Wait,
just wait till we get, do you know T'Pol's mom's name?
T'Pol's mom is T'Less.
T'Less is more. I just thought, if you're doing it, it's my turn to do it. I wrote it down.
All right. That was pretty funny. That was pretty good.
It's
funny,
dude,
for you, and me. It's not funny for Jesse or the audience.
Jesse was not amused.
It's just like you and I are having fun here. Everyone else is just like, Jesus.
I have friends.
It's like, when will they be done with this so they can keep talking about Trip's nipples?
The other lie was when T'Less goes, speaking of T'Less, she goes, I was under investigation by the security ministry. They claimed I had taken restricted data from the Academy archives.
Where is this cadence coming from? Just out of curiosity.
It's me presenting the lines in a way that's interesting.
Okay. I will accept that.
Read it monotone? I'm not a good actor, so the best I can do is give...
No, it is. I offer no critique. I offer no comment and no revision.
You're so true to yourself.
It was just... I was curious.
You got to be true to yourself.
That's why you're not a good actor.
And you got
to
be true to your school.
You've been... I disagree with the latter.
That's why.
And it's just... it's a cadence that you've been developing recently, and I've been curious if there was some particular...
Maybe I'm inspired by William Shatner.
I would have never guessed.
I mean, I'm not saying I sound like William Shatner. Okay. I'm saying I want to be memorable.
Yeah, and I think that was advice given to him by...
You've got that. Right.
By Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, that's
Christopher
right.
Plummer. Christopher Plummer said, you should talk funny because then people
Canadian
will remember
to another.
Yeah, good advice. Retroactively... Maybe, well, it may turn out that Christopher Plummer was fucking with Shatner. I don't know, but in any case, it seems to have worked.
Okay, so Kristen Schaal, who plays many things, but she was
Louise
on Bob's Burgers.
On Bob's Burgers.
In an interview, she was talking about how at least one teacher or mentor, someone was just like, or someone in the business was like, "You'll never make a career, basically, because your voice is too distinct or something."
Oh, come on,
and like, it's totally bullshit because like like everybody,
that's distinct voice.
She has tons of sense. Very distinct in this way that like works for what she's doing, and she's great in a lot of things. Yeah. So that's
and
just,
you're aspiring
what
to be like Kristen Schaal,
like
Kristen Schaal and William Shatner.
Yeah, just think of me as a combo of Kristen Schaal and William Shatner, and
I'll
then
start thinking of you like that.
Start thinking. Me like that now.
All right.
Okay. So
this is a very advanced thing.
So T'Less says, I was under investigation by security ministry. They claimed I had taken restricted data from Academy archives. Their accusations were fabricated. I was told that if I left the Academy, they would end the inquiry. T'Pol says, they blamed me for the incident at Pajem. T'Pol says, they couldn't reach me on Enterprise, so they punished you. It's criminal. So this is like a pretty fucking, that's a big lie, like that they just like condemned, they were pissed at T'Pol.
Who, it was by, all political.
It was political lies. So they like took this woman's career away, falsely accused her of some shit, just to get back at fucking T'Pol, who they assigned her in that position in the first place. Maybe she's taking a direction they don't like or something, but they assigned her to do a job and she's trying to do a good job. So
this is like pre-Federation.
Some fucked up shit.
Just like some fucked up shit.
Well, and what happened, and the reference to Pajem is from the
pajamas.
You've
been wearing your pajamas.
The Andorian incident, which is we discussed that, I believe.
We've been getting more help from the Andorians than we have from you.
Yeah, that was fucked.
I believe it was episode 71 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast in which we discussed the Andorian incident. But in that incident with the Andorians suspect the Vulcans of having a spy system set up on this monastery, and the Vulcans are like, no, this is just an ancient monastery that we're doing some meditating.
We like this stuff.
And in the process of Andorians and Vulcans fighting with each other and the humans sort of acting in between, it turns out, yeah, the Vulcans were totally spying the whole time. And T'Pol,
you knew they were, man.
Basically what sided with very long story short, I mean, she supported what the evidence showed, which was they were, you know, spying stuff in the course of her duties on the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. So, and you were talking about drama. This was
drama.
I have six short 2-3 second clips of emo T'Pol.
Lay it on me.
2 is a prime number. 3 is a prime number.
Yeah, 2 is kind of a cheating prime number, though.
It's a real one.
It's a cheat.
Mathematically, it's the most interesting prime number.
Not to me.
But to me, it is.
It's like a singularity.
Because it's the even one. It's the one.
You have a point. You have a point.
That's pretty fucking sexy.
But it's also...
You just don't like it because you like odd numbers.
No, but sometimes you have to exclude 2 from certain calculations about prime numbers because 2s can go into like everything really well. So sometimes you have to...
It's because you have the greatest number. It's because you're all about this cryptography business and I'm about the pure beauty of even numbers.
I love about the pure beauty of a circle.
I heard that 1 is the loneliest number.
3 is a crowd.
I heard that one too.
Unless you're with Jack Tripper, then 3 is a company.
Right.
It depends on which show you're watching. The good one or the bad one.
The Ropers?
No.
No.
There was 3's The Company, which is the good show, and then there's 3's A Crowd.
Oh, yeah, which was him and that new... his
Well, he
his
gets
beau.
Married, and then they're like dealing with her with the...
Right.
That show was
the
weak.
Father-in-law.
Dude.
Yeah. I remember watching that for some reason when I was a kid, though.
I know, yeah. It was on TV. You watched it.
Yeah.
It was because the Russians were threatening us with nukes the whole time we were kids.
That's World War III, World War III.
Nothing you
could
do but watch... Sequels to previous sitcoms. Like, you'd watch What's Happening Now after watching What's Happening.
Which was weak, also. Was
It was not
now.
As good as What's Happening. Although it was not as bad as 3's A Crowd.
No, that's true, yeah. I buy that.
I couldn't help them.
All right. I think, Dan, somewhere along the line, you were making some sort of aggressive point.
Aggressive?
I'm assuming it was.
Yeah, I know you were assuming. Aggressive point.
You were all yelling about something. I remember you yelling. There was lots of plosives.
All I was saying was
plosives.
I think you're projecting. All I was saying
plosives. Podcast.
Chief O'Brien.
I was saying there was 6 short clips.
Ah, yes. And then I did the whole talking about 2's business.
Yeah, you did.
I apologize.
No worries.
On me.
On my
classic.
Classic
case of talking 2's.
It's classic.
Classic case of talking 2's.
Classic case of talking 2's.
Yeah.
So the emo, T'Pol got pretty emotional this episode. Not because she's a woman, it's just because she's a Vulcan.
Okay.
I just made that worse, didn't I?
It's somewhat awkward that you stated it that way.
I know it is. Fuck. I just want to make people, but this goes back to what you were saying, Patrick, about when I said Vulcans don't lie. I want the audience to know that I'm not making some kind of lame assumption. Okay.
Got it.
And that's like a lame assumption.
Got it. I agree.
And so I was just making it clear for the audience. But it didn't come off.
What was the point again?
It didn't come off well, though, so I apologize.
T'Pol is doing what?
T'Pol is she has six parts where she seems like she's her emotions are coming through.
Yes, I keep forgetting that there's audio clips involved in this whole business.
Here's the first one in order.
Earth is supposed to be our ally.
You can tell she's getting really pissed because her mom's talking about like fuck Earthlings.
Why would the Ministry do this?
She's getting really pissed here about the Ministry.
It's criminal.
She's like.
How could you let them do this?
And then she's like, she's in despair now. She's like, ah!
That wouldn't be your concern.
Yeah. No,
that was just her being like, fuck you.
Fuck you, Mom.
And then the last one is.
I'm grateful that you're here.
Now she's crying. She's really sad.
Yeah. I know.
So there's some emotional T'Pol.
There was a lot of emotional T'Pol in this one. And her mom, Teles, is a more stoic, but Joanna Cassidy is a fantastic actress. Yeah, she does such a great job. She's one of the better, there's a lot of wonderful Vulcan portrayals, and I love Jolene Blaylock, her portrayal. I think Joanna Cassidy does a great job as her mom.
And her mother.
And I also like that in her eyes, as soon as T'Pol shows up with Trip, like in Joanna Cassidy's eyes and Teles's eyes, it's like, oh, you're fucking this dude.
Yeah.
That
like right away.
That, you've never brought a colleague home before.
Yeah.
This is the first time you've ever brought a colleague.
The questions are almost rhetorical. Yeah. The way she's presenting them to T'Pol, because she's just like, every question could just be like the subtitles instead of in English. It should have just been like, you're fucking that dude.
Yeah, right.
It's super obvious. You're fucking this Florida fella. Oh, I thought you were about to click on something, Dan.
Oh, no. I was just looking.
Balana's on it.
Balana's on it.
It's agreeable to see you.
It is. So T'Pol wants to take Trip back to Vulcan. The initial idea is that she's going to introduce him to her mom and vice versa.
Right, he's all smiling.
And they're going to go to the lava fields and have some fool around on the lava fields and look at the statues and
hot
get all freaky in the hot sauna and all that business.
It's got nothing on it.
But when they arrive, T'Pol has to deal with a few unexpected challenges.
Koss
being one of them, although apparently shouldn't have been that unexpected because he seems to be like super into her, but in that weird Vulcan way where he's like, I only want to marry you. As soon as we get married, you spend a year here, and then you can off and do whatever you want.
First of all, that was confusing because he said at first, he's like, you can just live here with me, and then you can go off to where you want to go. And then like she's like, you want an absent wife, and he says, I want you to be happy, which sounds like mind games to me, because obviously if he wanted her to be happy, he wouldn't be trying to marry her against her will. But later on in the episode, she's talking to Trip, and she goes, they've agreed we won't have to reside together, not right away. I'll remain on Enterprise for the time being. So what he's saying is to stay here for a year, then go off. But then when she says to Trip, she's like, I'll go off to Enterprise, then come back here. So they kind of changed it midstream. I don't know.
Well, because she talks about having, like, after that conversation, having more negotiations with Koss's family to come up with the whatever the current deal that they come up with. It's confusing because they don't explicitly state what Koss's deal is, right? And I think there's an answer that works, but the one of them that doesn't work is it political? Is the reason he wants to marry T'Pol because of who her father was, and that it would somehow advantage him in some fashion? Is this a whole Game of Thrones type situation, a War of the Roses type deal? It doesn't seem like that. They don't seem to be setting Koss up as like a total piece of shit.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he's trying to like basically. She doesn't want to get married, and he wants to get married to her, and it's not some cultural thing, because T'Pol even said at the end of Trip, she's like, they're not making, Trip asked her if they're making her do this, she's like, no, but like, she cares about her mom.
But here's the deal, right? I think this is what confuses things, is I think the main way you have to read this is that Koss's primary motivation is purely based on the fact that they were betrothed as kids. That's the normal thing in Vulcan society. That's what you're expected to do. And yes, T'Pol, from our perspective, we're like, T'Pol should be an independent person and be able to do whatever she wants. I still agree with that. But by the choice that T'Pol's making, she's also removing from him the choice to pursue, in his mind, his cultural preference, which is, I'm supposed to marry the person that I've been supposed to marry since I was seven.
The point I was just trying to make is that, yes, different cultures have different views on marriage and love and things like that and how that all works. And my point is that at the end, it's explicitly said, they're not making me do this. There's no...
No, because they can't. It still has to be her choice. He's arguing to try to get her to do it. And by the way, I'm not saying he's a good person because fundamentally, in order to get her to do it, he blackmails her.
Yeah.
He manipulates her by using the political power of his father.
He goes, she was, he talks about her mom. He goes, she was asked to resign. And she's like, why? He goes, I've said too much. Yeah. Like, that's a fucking obnoxious baiting technique. He knew exactly how much he said.
That's the thing is that's where it's a little bit uneven, and this part, this aspect of it is tricky, and partly you can just ascribe it to whatever Vulcan drama, but it doesn't seem to be purely political motivation. So he seems to have more of like a cultural motivation. You could maybe even read into a more lascivious, like he's just like T'Pol's hot or whatever. Mm-hmm. He really wants to marry T'Pol, even if he doesn't really get to spend any time with her because they're happy to make that agreement. He just wants to be married to her. I buy that can be just culture, like that motivation is purely cultural. The problem, of course, then overlaid on top of that is that he and other members of his family are willing to blackmail people into getting what they want. And that's fucked up.
I like how he just appears all like suddenly and he's all like looming in the doorway. He's like some kind of like villain from some kind of old melodrama. He's going to tie T'Pol to like the railroad tracks or something.
It's too bad we don't know a little bit more about this. This is where, so like on the one hand, when you watch an episode like this, you're like, think about how many quiet moments are in this episode and how much pure character, just people talking to each other.
Yeah,
something that we get a little less of in the modern Trek 10, you know, episode season long arcs where there's a lot more action. On the other hand, on a newer Star Trek series, you'd probably have costs introduced and there'd be more details layered in by the time it got to this point in the story so that we'd understand what's going on a little bit better than I think we do.
When he all fixes
I'd be happy to take a look at it.
He fixes her thing for the Besmars, or what's that food they were eating? The Blas flumes? Vespar, not Vesper.
That was the food, though, that was before Teles went shopping.
Beskar, not Beskar.
So Teles went shopping and came back with a basket of, like, only phallic fruits and vegetables.
Basket of deplorables.
She's just pulling like one after the other. It's like, oh, here's a big long carrot looking thing. Oh, here's a big long squash looking thing.
So
she's all like, you're fucking my daughter.
So when after he fixes it and she asks him, you know, if he can fix some other
the stasis units.
The stasis unit, that's right. And he all shrugs when she's like, yeah, fix some other stuff. He's like, okay, sure. And then like someone knocks on the door, which is what we know to be Koss. She goes, would you mind? And like to me, if somebody's in that situation, if someone knocked on the door while I was in the conversation with somebody who lived there, and that person who lived there said to me, would you mind? I would assume they meant that they were going to excuse themselves to go answer the door.
Exactly.
I would not assume that they wanted me to answer the door.
Yeah.
So I thought that was confusing.
Yeah.
But it's not a big deal.
Vulcans. What are you going to do?
So, yeah, there's a few little weird quirks about this plot line. But overall, it's very interesting.
No, I enjoyed this episode because it was a nice kind of meditation on things. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, the ending was like kind of like up in the air. It wasn't some kind of happy ending. Yeah. It was just kind of like built some texture around things and stuff. I
like the contrast that they made a real explicit effort to highlight the contrast between Trip and Koss, in that Koss is doing all this manipulation and he wants to support the culture and all that, but using all this manipulation. Teles sees him do that. Teles presumably is more traditional and she's like, I would like T'Pol to do this traditional thing, but the traditional guy is doing fucked up shit to manipulate the situation to get us to do that. Meanwhile, Trip is like, I'm not even going to tell T'Pol I love her because I don't want to risk that she would cause problems to you, who I just met, or cause problems to herself. He's like, I'm not cool with that. And she's like, oh, this dude, he's a good dude.
See, okay, and so that's what I'm...
The other dude's a piece of shit.
That's what I thought when she looked at him after he was like, I don't want to cause her problems, because he made it about her and not himself.
Yes.
It looked like she was looking at him being like, wow, you really do care about her. But part of me wondered also if she was also kind of like... come on, man, just go for it. Fuck that guy. Like she was just secretly disappointed that he didn't actually like go for it. But that's probably not what she was thinking.
Could have been a little of both. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go fuck my daughter.
fuck him.
You always wear a snazzy dresser.
Okay. Anything else about this?
It's agreeable to see you.
It's agreeable to see you.
This is a fun. It's a good episode of Enterprise.
This is almost like satire.
It's agreeable to see you.
Like just, I don't even know. There's no way, that's the appropriate thing to say, but it's just kind of funny. It's like, it's agreeable to see you. It's like a joke.
Would you rather go to a Vulcan wedding or a Gorn wedding?
Vulcan weddings seem boring.
Gorn weddings are more dangerous.
Vulcan weddings are super intense, though. Everyone's all huddled together.
Gorn weddings,
so they
you're
can be
get
in frame.
On.
Everyone's huddled in such a way that they can all fit on the set at the same time.
I had this.
There's more drums.
I have these three sound clips, and I'm trying to remember why.
Why?
I was under investigation by the security ministry.
Oh yeah, because she said ministry.
Security ministry.
Ministry.
That makes me
security
think of
ministry.
Minestrone soup. Minestrone.
Now I'm getting hungry.
Ministry. Security ministry. They.
The Minish Cap. Zelda and the Minish Cap.
I was under investigation by the security ministry. They.
Okay, that's one clip. You said you had three.
Those were three clips.
Those are three separate clips.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Okay.
Come on.
I apologize
dude.
To the audience. You got to go through those again.
Here's the first one.
I was under investigation by the security ministry. They.
This is the second one.
Security ministry. They.
This is the third one.
Ministry.
Those are those all the same clip?
No, they're just cut shorter.
Okay, so it is the same clip.
Yeah.
But okay, I understand.
Sorry, I guess it was a little misleading.
It's okay. You
got it's because of this Commander Tucker, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. That's it for us. That's it for us this week in terms of Star Trek Enterprise Season 4, Episode 3, Home. Next week we will dump all of this business into Dan's.
Delicious. Thank you.
Bespoke algorithm. And it will spit out an episode. I don't know. We're probably due for what? Like TNG or something? Next.
Vulcans appreciate
you. I think so, man. I think we're due for a TNG fucking G.
Probably TNG. You know?
I appreciate your concern, but I'll be fine.
We'll see. We'll see what it is. Probably TNG, but we'll see what's up.
I lived on Earth for many years.
Before we head out, social media, @IsGotStarTrek everywhere, you know, Twitter, Mastodon, etc. YouTube is good. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all that good stuff. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Tell all those people.
Give them some Nauru vines from me.
Are we, does anybody have any announcements, any gigs? Dan, do you have any shows coming up at the Chuckle Hut?
The Chuckle Hut.
Yeah.
Do you think she thought it was silly when Trip Tucker gave her the Vulcan salute? Do you think Teles was like, eh?
She thought he was a chump?
Yeah.
You said?
It was just like, eh. I mean.
Eh.
I mean, at that point in history, like, he may have been the first human to like go to Vulcan.
Human.
And like try to like do that, Jenks. And she was probably like, okay, whatever.
Okay, whatever.
My daughter's fucking this guy.
Okay. So yeah, that's probably good enough for this week. So we will get our shit together between now.
I don't think we will.
And next week.
Who told you that?
And we will have a whole new episode to talk about.
I don't know who told
you. Check our social media or our website, www.itsgotstartrek.com, in order to see what we are going to be discussing next week. And then soon after that, not too distant future.
I don't get it.
It'll be Star Trek Strange New Worlds. It'll be all new episodes of Star Trek again.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah. All right. We're mixing all sorts of shit up. All right. We'll talk to you.
I find this amusing.
I do. We'll talk to you next
week. What if
week.
I declared the call a fee?
No, don't do that. That's with the whole with the music, with the curved swords and stuff. And the
I'm sorry.
And Spock. All right. We'll talk to you for
I'm
real next week.
I'm her mother.
Bye-bye.
You could come with me.
To Vulcan?
The transport leaves at 1100 hours.
Where would I stay?